So this is translation, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Vishvaparva wisely thought that Shukracharya's displeasure would bring danger and that his pleasure would bring material gain. Therefore he carried out Shukracharya's order and served him like a slave. He gave his daughter Shamishta to Devyani, and Shamishta served Devyani like a slave, along with thousands of other women. In the beginning of these affairs concerning Shamishta and Devyani, we saw that Shamishta had many friends. Now these friends became maid servants of Devyani. When a girl married a Kshatriya king, it was customary for all her girlfriends to go with her to her husband's house. For instance, when Vasudev married Devaki, the mother of Krishna, he married all six of her sisters. And she also had many friends who accompanied her. A king would maintain not only his wife, but also the many friends and maidservants of his wife. Some of these maidservants would become pregnant and give birth to children. Such children were accepted as Dasi Putra, the sons of the maidservants. And the king would maintain them. The female population is always greater than the male. Since a woman needs to be protected by a man, the king would maintain many girls who acted either as friends or as maidservants of the queen. In the history of Krishna's household life, we find that Krishna married 16,108 wives. These were not maidservants but direct queens, and Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 forms to maintain different establishments for each and every wife. This is not possible for ordinary men. Therefore, although the kings had to maintain many, many servants and wives, not all of them had different establishments. Om Jnana Tirmandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sahagajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gauranki Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishapanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vanchakalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Evaibacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ramo, Rama Ramo, Hare Hare. So once again, the translation is, after hearing Shukracharya's request, Vishvaparva agreed to fulfill Devyani's desire and he awaited her words. Devyani then expressed the desire as follows. Whenever I marry by the order of my father, my friend Shamishta must go with me as my maidservant along with her friends. Okay. So, I like to seek the blessings of all the devotees. It's always nerve-wracking to sit on the Vyasasan, but I'm sure with the blessings of the Vaishnavas, I can say something. It's interesting, I heard very recently that a speaker may say wonderful things, but that's because of the eagerness of the hearers. So when the devotees are so eager to hear, Krishna empowers the speaker. So whatever I can speak is because of your eagerness to hear. So thank you for that. We have a wonderful chapter here. We're reading Canto number 9, Canto 9, verse 18. And it's a very wonderful pastime. It's about King Yayati. And just so that we're up to scratch for the story of today's purport, the story goes like this, that Shamishta, who's the daughter of King Vishvaparva, she was walking in the garden, in the palace, with her friend Devyani. And, you know, one day they wanted to go for a swim. So they went for a swim. And at that time, Lord Shiva comes with his Nandi, the bull carrier. And because of that, they all become quite nervous. They became a bit, you know, embarrassed. So they all got out of the water and then got dressed up again. In this process, by mistake, Shamishta, she basically put on the clothes of Devyani. And when she did this, Devyani becomes very angry. So Devyani is a daughter of a Brahmana. And Shamishta, she's a daughter of a Kshatriya. And it's mentioned that Shamishta by nature was very simple, but she also had very hot temper. She was very angry by nature. So then when Shamishta put on Devyani's clothes, Devyani becomes very angry. The daughter of Shukacharya understood this, and she angrily rebuked the princess by saying this. So I'm just going to recite what she said, because it was quite heavy. She goes, "Oh, just see what this maidservant Shamishta has done. Disregarding all etiquette, she has put on my dress just like a dog that snatches ghee meant for use in sacrifice. We are among the qualified brahmanas who have created the universe by their austerity, and who always keeps the absolute truth within the core of their hearts. Because the brahmanas are the only worshipable objects within this world, not only the great demigods offer them prayers, but even the Supreme Lord himself. And yet, although this girl's father is our disciple, she has put on my dress exactly like a Shudra trying to take charge of Vedic knowledge." That's heavy, isn't it? And then Shamishta, being very simple, but she's also got hot temper, she becomes angry and she rebukes with cruel words back to Devyani. But not only does she do that, she takes all of her clothes and she pushes Devyani into a well. So there is Devyani, no clothes, and then Shamishta goes back to her palace. So Shamishta's in anxiety, you know, Devyani's in anxiety in the well. And at that time, who comes along? King Yayati comes along. He's on his hunting excursion. And then when King Yayati sees he was thirsty, he goes for drinking some water. He goes, he sees Devyani, he offers his upper garment and then pulls her up. And then this is where, you know, they kind of decided to get married. That was the process then. Well, actually, there's a story behind that. Devyani was actually, she cursed a personality called Kacha, who was the son of Brihaspati. Because she cursed him, Kacha also cursed her back, saying that because you curse me, you will never get a Brahmana for a husband. In the Vedic culture, there was two processes of marriage. It's called Anuloma and Pratiloma. So Anuloma was marriage between a Brahmana man and a Kshatriya girl. This was socially accepted. It was socially accepted. But Pratiloma wasn't socially accepted because it was a marriage between a Kshatriya man, which is King Yayati, and a Brahmana girl, which is Devyani. So even though King Yayati wasn't so happy with this marriage because it's not sanctioned by the Shastras, he still continued because he thought this was destiny. And also he was attracted by the youthful beauty of Devyani. So hence, they decided to kind of get together. Then they departed. Devyani then goes back to home with her father, Shukacharya. Shukacharya becomes furious, and then he goes to the palace of King Vishvaparva. King Vishvaparva knew that Shukacharya will get angry. Either he'll chastise me heavily or he'll curse me. So before even Shukacharya enters the palace, King Vishvaparva would just go on the road, and he paid his obeisances and he apologized. And then this is the verse we have today where Shukacharya is requesting, "Whatever my daughter wants, please execute it." And that's where we are here today. So today's purport is quite interesting. You know, when you read Bhagavatam, and sometimes I think when people outside read stuff like this, what do you think goes through their head? You know, like Krishna marrying 16,108 wives. You know, imagine Chitraketu pastime. How many wives did he have? 10 million, right? 10 million wives. And when someone reads this, they're like, oh my God, this is like, are you guys supposed to have the highest form of knowledge? You know, it makes you bewildered. What are the other things do you think that we have in our culture that people may find bewildering? They do that? Elephants chanting Sanskrit prayers, okay? Anything else? Any other culture that we find bewildering? Ravana with 10 heads. He has to balance his heads. Yes, go in through. Which are almost like slaves. People find that quite bewildering. That 2 weeks ago, BBC came, and Gauri Prabhu told me that, look, they're coming, so make sure, you know, you sort things out. And I was in anxiety because they wouldn't come to a morning program. They had no basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and they wouldn't come to the morning program where devotees chant in ecstasy during japa time, walking around Tulsi also. It's like when people see that, they think, like, this is so cultish, isn't it? And so, you know, it's interesting. We have a culture. Culture is very important. But it's mentioned that to understand and appreciate culture, you have to know the goal also. Right? In this world, we have so many different cultures out there. But that culture, it actually becomes difficult to appreciate it if we don't know what the goal is. So I want to explore today's session on what culture actually is. We've got about 25 minutes, so hopefully we can do something. So what is culture? Sorry? Tradition? What else? How do you define culture? What they live, the values, okay? Okay, this is what they live on. Okay, thank you. Yes, Peru? Okay, so I had a class on culture and etiquette by Gaurang Prabhu, and it's a wonderful lecture. I made some notes, and I found it very nice to appreciate what culture and etiquette is. And after reading this lecture, I was inspired to follow different etiquettes and culture in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, I'd like to share some of these principles. So Gaurang Prabhu defines culture as an environment that is conducive in order for a certain transformation to happen. Okay, so for example, a yogurt. When you want to convert a milk into yogurt, what do you need? You need a culture. That culture provides an environment for milk to turn into yogurt, right? So similarly, culture is very crucial because it gives you an environment that kind of somehow or the other provides some sort of transformation, okay? So it's mentioned that in life there's three stages, okay? You have the goal. When you have the goal, then there is a process which you can achieve the goal. In order for you to actually execute the process, you need something called culture. So culture is like an environment that helps you to actually execute the process which can help you achieve your goal. So I'll give you a typical example. Why do people go to university? To? That is a key. Not go partying. Sorry, Prabhu. So people go to university because they want to get qualification. They want to get a degree, correct? So what is the process to do that? You have to study, right? So you have to go to university. So what is the culture and etiquette? What is the environment that helps you to continue to study? University or a library, right? So the goal is that you want to get a first class honors. The process is you have to study, and the culture is an environment that helps you to do that. So therefore, culture is a library. Now, if you take a goal out of this picture, do you think students like to spend their time in the library? It makes no sense, right? Even if you look at athletes or people who want to achieve gold medals, what's their goal? To achieve gold medal. The process is they have to actually become an expert in that field. So whether it's running or, you know, whether it's football or whatever. And the culture is an environment which includes their specific diet, their lifestyle, etc. So if the goal is taken away, culture makes no sense and no one's inspired to do that. So similarly, people, when they read or try to understand our culture, they can't appreciate Krishna conscious culture until they understand the goal. So now the question arises, is what is our goal? So what's our goal? Krishna? become one with Krishna? Servant of Krishna. Become Krishna Prema, in essence. So the goal is you want to go back to the spiritual world and you want to develop this love of Godhead. Okay? So it's mentioned, there's an example given by Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto, that Krishna is like a magnet and we are like iron. Right? So ideally, magnet is attached or attracted to iron. But unfortunately, the soul who's an iron is covered by rust. What do you think the rust represents? Lust, exactly. So rust, so the soul is like iron covered by rust, which is lust. So therefore, the goal of life is a transformation of lust to love, right? And so what is the process for us converting our lust to love? Yes, Prahlad Maharaj gives us a specific process. What is it? Nine processes, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, etc. And the culture and etiquette is an environment which can help us practice those nine processes and achieve our goal. So therefore, our dealings with Vaishnavas, the way we dress, you know, the way we look, all this is meant to help us practice Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and the nine processes of devotional service, so then we can convert our love into lust. Does that make sense? Right? So that's culture. Now, sometimes one could argue that we all know our goal in life is Krishna Prem and converting our lust into love. But why is it that we still struggle a lot? Why is it that we struggle to practice the culture? Sometimes the culture becomes very difficult to practice, isn't it? Oh no, of course, you devotees are wonderful and you love the culture and it's ecstatic, isn't it? But I myself struggle with the culture, you know. Sometimes, oh, do you have to do this? There's so many rules and regulations to follow. Why can't we just naturally practice spontaneous love, you know? But it doesn't quite work, right? Because you have to purify yourself. So therefore, it's mentioned, actually, the secret of success in Krishna consciousness, believe it or not, is actually, it's mentioned to the extent one is very clear and fixed about their goal, to that extent that we fix about following certain process and culture. So we have to be completely fixed and convinced about the goal, and then it makes easier for us to practice the process and culture. It becomes second nature. So in order for us to understand the goal and it becomes more fixed, I want to introduce you to the spiritual world. Okay? It's very nice to explain. Gauranga Prabhu gives this example, and I think it's very relevant to understand this. Now, in the spiritual world, who's the center of all attention? Krishna. And what happens in the spiritual world? What is the goal in the spiritual world? To please Krishna. So in the spiritual world, it's mentioned every single thing is used to please or give pleasure to Krishna. Okay? And the most bewildering thing is that even an inanimate object is conscious. So when you look at a stone, it's conscious. When you look at a rasgulla, it's a conscious living entity. So once somebody asked Radha Maharaj that, Maharaj, so if rasgulla is conscious and Krishna eats the rasgulla, what happens to the rasgulla? Right? I mean, it's an interesting question, right? What happens to the rasgulla? And then, and of course, to understand spiritual matters, you know, we can't conceive it because we're trying to understand it using material intelligence, which doesn't, you know, it's difficult to comprehend. But Maharaj answered it very nicely. He goes, the rasgulla enters Krishna's mouth and it gives pleasure to Krishna. And then when Krishna is satisfied, the rasgulla pops out again. That's the answer Radha Maharaj gives. And then he goes, so the rasgulla remains eternally an individual and Krishna's pleasure that rasgulla gives remains eternally also. So the point is that everything in the spiritual world is there to give Krishna pleasure. So as mentioned, Krishna expands into, who does Krishna first expand into? Balaram. Well, actually, this is quite interesting. Actually, Krishna expands into Balaram. Balaram also, there's two types of Balaram. You have Balaram and then you have Baladev. Okay? So it's mentioned in the spiritual world, in order for you to provide Krishna pleasure, you need what? Facilities. Right? You need facilities to give Krishna pleasure. So if you want to cook something for Krishna, you need facilities. Krishna wants to have good time roaming in herding the cows, so there's facilities needed. And so therefore it's mentioned in the spiritual world, Balaram is actually in charge of creating facilities. And facilities is created by the sat potency of the Supreme Lord, which is called Sandini potency. Okay? So in the spiritual, facilities needed to give Krishna pleasure, and this is done by Balaram. Balaram gives the facility, he creates facility. When you have the facility, what else do you need in order for you to use it? Knowledge. You need knowledge. So therefore, knowledge in the spiritual world is provided by Baladev. Baladev is actually the Samvit or Chit potency. And therefore, Baladev gives you knowledge of how to use the facility to give Krishna pleasure. Okay? Now, when you give Krishna pleasure, what happens next? You get pleasure, right? So many times people ask that, isn't Krishna a bit self-centered? The whole spiritual world is created, so he's the center of attention, and he actually gets all the pleasure, right? Many people ask this, like, isn't God a bit egotistic? Everything me, me, me. If God is supreme and he can do everything, he can also make us supreme person of Godhead if he wants to, right? But he doesn't. Why? Yes. Self-realized. It's mentioned that Krishna does not give the position of supreme Lord because he wants you to experience more happiness than he does. So therefore, he keeps you in a subordinate position. In the spiritual world, subordinate position is higher than being superior. And that is the reason why Krishna comes down as Lord Chaitanya to experience the happiness devotees feel, which Krishna can't feel. So therefore, it's mentioned when devotees serve Krishna, Krishna gets pleasure, but he reciprocates. And therefore, the devotees in the spiritual also experience some sort of bliss. And who provides this bliss? Radharani. She's known as the bliss master. Okay? Radharani is known as the bliss master. She's the one who actually gives the experience of happiness, pleasure. And this is done through the Ladini potency or the Ananda potency, the Ananda aspect of the Lord. Like that. So, okay, this is wonderful. We all know this. But what does it mean to me right now? I'm sitting here in Bhagavatam class. What does this have to do, anything to do with me? So actually, it has a lot to do with us. It's mentioned the soul by nature is seeking pleasure. Even in the material world, we've come down because we decided to enjoy separate from Krishna. So therefore, Krishna creates this material world, right? So it's all centered around enjoying, experiencing bliss. So in this world, when we come down, what's the first thing the living entity gets? We get material body. Who provides the material body? And who provides the mother's body? Her mother. But what about her mother? Who provides the material body? And who's in charge of material nature? Who creates everything? Thank you, Jai Krishna. Lord Brahma. Okay, so in this material world, there are facilities provided for us for our enjoyment, and that's created by Lord Brahma. Okay, and so once we have this facility, it says that living entity in this material world, when they're trying to enjoy material things, their activities focus on four things. What is the four things? There's four activities everyone's always engaged in: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Do people need training for this? Do people actually go for some classes saying, okay, this is how you eat, this is how you sleep, etc.? So where does that knowledge come from? That knowledge to use this facility for enjoyment, where does that knowledge come from? The Paramatma. Okay? So in the material world, Brahma creates a facility, Paramatma provides knowledge, and the pleasure, as mentioned, Radharani expands herself into Durga Devi, and Durga Devi gives us an experience of bliss. But this bliss is a little different. This bliss is actually there when she pokes us with a trident. What does the trident represent? No, the three miseries. Adi Bhautik, Adi Atmik, Adi Devik. So this is the whole purpose. So in this material world, everything's a perverted reflection. Where in the spiritual world, we have the Krishna is in the center, and the whole facility is provided to for his enjoyment. In the material world, all the facility knowledge is provided for our enjoyment. When we engage in Krishna's enjoyment, we experience bliss. When we engage in our own sense and enjoyment, we experience misery. Okay? And now, so this is actually another form of Krishna's mercy, that we experience misery. Because when we experience misery in the material world, it says that is the beginning of our spiritual life because we start doubting our existence. Okay? We start doubting our existence. Why are we here? Maybe this is not my original home. You know? And this is a very powerful thing as well. Nikhil Prabhu, can we? Thank you. So just diagrams helps understand things better. So Shantanu Prabhu has very kindly done some very, it's quite intricate, but it makes sense. So just a little this way. Okay, so as you can see, the goal is Krishna Prema, self-transformation, processes, nine processes of devotional service, and the culture is the etiquette given in scriptures. So as you said, in the spiritual world, Balaram from Sat Potency creates facilities. Baladev from the Chit Potency gives you knowledge. And Radharani gives you the bliss. In the material world is the opposite. Brahma gives you the facility. Paramatma provides knowledge. And Durga Devi actually gives you the experience. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki. Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Gaudita ki. Jai. So now when one starts understanding that this material world is not for me and I need to change, Krishna is so kind that he also provides that facility. Okay? He also provides a facility. It's mentioned that when you use the facility of the material world in Krishna's pleasure, that is actually potency from the spiritual world. So it's mentioned when you use facility in Krishna's pleasure, that is actually provided by Balaram or the Sandini Sat Potency. So when you look at Madanga, what is another name for Madanga? What do we say Madanga is? Is Balaram, isn't it? So anything used in Krishna's service, even in the material world, is actually provided by Balaram or the Sat Potency. And when you have these things, like I was playing harmonium, was very wonderful and expert, as you can tell. But if you want to expertly play harmonium Madanga, what else do you need? Knowledge. And who gives you this knowledge? The spiritual master. And the spiritual master's representation of who? Baladev. So Guru Tattva comes from Baladev Tattva. So in the spiritual world, we can have the same facility that's in the spiritual, in the material world. We can use that facility in Krishna's service, and the knowledge is given by Baladev in the form of spiritual master. And when you do that, when you're serving things in the material world in Krishna's service, what's the reaction for that? Pleasure, bliss potency, right? Now one could question that, okay, I've been engaged in devotional service, I'm using everything in Krishna's service, I have the knowledge how to do it, but yet I'm not feeling the pleasure potency. Are you? Are we in ecstasy when we, you know, doing different devotional services? We're not, really. The reason why is because in the initial stage of devotional service, you go from negative to neutral, then to positive. So therefore, they're saying the first symptoms of bhakti yoga, according to Nectar of Devotion, is what? Klesha Agni. Okay? So therefore, when you perform devotional service, what happens is you're burning away your past material karma. And therefore, you may not experience bliss, but you're coming from negative to neutral. And then when you get sufficiently purified, then you experience the same Ladini Shakti potency you experience in the spiritual, you can experience in the material world also. Does that make sense? So when you focus on the goal, then all these things actually makes wonderful sense. So, you know, when it talks, yesterday I added Gita Life, and in Gita Life, you get some very challenging questions in Gita Life. You know, it's a bit of a challenge, but it's good. It's a good learning curve. Somebody asked me a question that in Mahabharata, 6.4 million soldiers died. So then they asked, so what happens to the wives of these soldiers? Right? So then you have to be careful how you answer it, because you can't mention sati, right? Because then it's like, what? Because it's so, Vedic culture right nowadays is completely diminished because people are following the culture very ritualistically, but they don't know what the goal is. And therefore it's slowly declining. So when I was speaking to this devotee, then, and it's interesting that we have this verse, that is mentioned back in the days, it was a responsibility of the king to make sure that all the citizens that's under him are taken care of. You know, so even though the wives were widowed, the king was maintaining the wives, the women, and children. And this is the reason why women population was more than men because, you know, men would go out on war and, you know, they would die. So therefore, there was imbalance in the population. So therefore, men were allowed to marry many women so they can take care of them because women needed protection. And therefore, you know, this was sanctioned. But when you talk it from a material perspective, marrying many women, then people think it's exploitation, you know. But actually, when you look at it from a bigger perspective, everyone's goal is to go back to the spiritual world. So therefore, facilities provided in such a way that you can maintain your physical body at the same time you make your journey back to Godhead. I think that's all I have to say. I had so many things to say, but I was conscious of time. So we have 4 minutes. I might regret this later on, but do we have any questions?